Good morning. Health is the topic of discussion this morning. Children's health, specifically. And my guests are from the Pennington Biomedical Research Center here in Baton Rouge. Now, coming up later this hour, I'll be chatting with Dr. Amanda Stiano about childhood obesity. But first, I have with me Dr. Stephanie Broyles and Arwin Marker. Dr. Broyles is an assistant professor at Pennington Biomedical, who studies community health. We'll find out what that's all about. Her focus is understanding how the contexts in which we live, like our neighborhood, where we work, where we play, social networks, how they shape our risks of disease and health outcomes. She's currently studying the role of play streets to help children be more active. Arwin Marker is project manager for the Play Streets Initiative. She works on a number of child-related research studies at Pennington and oversees the Psychological Assessment Laboratory. What does that do? Well, that helps assess the effect of mood, stress, eating behaviors, and quality of life for many studies at Pennington. Good morning to everybody. Hey, did I get all those introductions right?
You were awesome.
Thank you. All right, now, Stephanie and Arwin, we're going to start with you. A lot of us might not think about our communities when we think about health lifestyles. We think about eating and exercise and stuff like that. How can our community, how can our environment impact our overall health?
So, I mean, that's such a good question. And I think we often get hung up on, oh, do I eat this or do I eat that? What's healthier? What has less calories? Oh, I need to go to the gym for an hour. And I think what people kind of forget is that there are all these subtle cues around us that either make it harder or easier to make those choices. So, for example, if your neighborhood was a great place to walk, you had sidewalks, you knew your neighbors, well, how much easier would it be for you to get outside and walk for 30 minutes or an hour? And, you know, when we think about parents and their ability to help their children be more physically active, we hear again and again that so many of the aspects of the neighborhoods that they live in affect that ability. And I mean, Arwin's helped us out with some of these focus groups. We've even heard parents say to us, God, if I just knew my neighbors better, I would feel more comfortable letting my kids, get outside and play more. So I think what we're trying to do is just remind people that there are these bigger contexts that also make it easier or harder for us to make these healthy choices.
That's kind of an obvious one, though. I mean, what are some of the more subtle cues?
Subtle cues. Well, so your workplace environment. Think about what's there in the vending machine. I mean, we all know that, you forget to pack your lunch or you're looking at convenience. So what if your choices in the vending machine were actually healthier, but cost the same amount? And I mean, price is another big one. So many people say, well, shoot, when you're looking at, say, fast food, or you go into the grocery store and you're looking at the cost of healthy versus more processed foods, cost plays in. So these are all little ways.
Are most people aware of what's in food? Have you found through your experience?
I think people, and Amanda can kind of jump in on this too. I'm not necessarily a nutritionist, but I think people know in their gut what's healthy and what's not healthy.
But for example, here's one that's kind of subtle. Mm-hmm. Enriched white flour. I happen to know that that's not the healthiest thing for mm-hmm. you, and that whole grains are better. Mm-hmm. But you buy a loaf of white bread, you buy hamburger buns, and what's the first product on the ingredients list? Enriched white flour. Mm-hmm. Are most people aware of subtle things like that?
Sure,
they're aware of sugar. What's the other thing?
The corn syrup. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. I really can't speak to that. I mean, that's less my area of expertise. And so I would say what I study a little bit more is some of the more physical aspects of our environment, neighborhood and workplace, and also some of the social. So if you think about living in a high crime area and how that, you know, might create barriers to getting outside and playing. The kind of social networks that you form in your neighborhood that make it more pleasant to be outside. And so these are things that a lot of people don't think about having the ability to change when they also think about, you know, adding that hour of exercise as part of their New Year's resolutions.
Establishing a social network one-on-one, person to person, is important. What is social networking on the computer doing to us?
Oh, well, I mean, that's a really good question. I mean, you know, I'm sure there's some positive benefits to that. You know, always kind of creating support. You know, you hear about, you know, the blogs that help support each other mm-hmm. through being more active and positive behavior change. Of course, you know, being online also generally involves sitting down in front of the computer, which means that you're not necessarily being outside physically active. But, you know, Dr. Siena might have some things to comment on this as well, because she does study ways to make technology more active.
That's right. That's exactly what I do. And people are surprised by that usually, because screen time is usually vilified as contributing to obesity, contributing to sitting. And so screen time is any time you might spend traditionally in front of a TV, but nowadays it's on your cell phone, on a laptop, any device that has a screen. Kids spend about 7.5 or 8 hours a day using screens on average. So if you think about that, that's longer than a lot of them are in school, and about the same amount of time they're sleeping. So if they're not sleeping or in school, pretty much they're in front of a screen. But we try to not really push back on the screen time, but let's figure out ways to make it healthy and helpful. And so when we're talking about social networking, there is a lot of interesting research out there that, just like Dr. Broyles mentioned, we can be supporting children's healthy choices by giving them information about that enriched flour and whole grains and things like that, and really encouraging them using some of these social network sites.
Dr. Broyles, let's talk about kids specifically. Okay. How is our children's health affected by the places they play? How's it affected by where they go to school and how they spend their free time?
So we actually just finished wrapping up a study at Pennington that involved actually 12 countries around the world. I mean, every continent was touched. And I want to say, so we recruited children through schools. We had children from, I think it was about 26 schools in Baton Rouge, but, you know, close to 500 schools when you think internationally. And when we looked at the amount of physical activity that children got in a school day, half of that was determined by where they went to school. So, for example, in Baton Rouge, in our schools, we had some kids only getting on average about 11 minutes of physical activity during the school day, and other schools where they were getting nearly an hour of physical activity during the school day. So, you know, that tells us there's so much that we can be doing to improve the school environment. And this, you know, this could include prioritizing PE classes, making PE classes actually more physically active, because, you know, we hear stories where PE is just sit down and you know, learn about the rules of games versus actually getting out and playing. And there are also schools that are actually integrating some physical activity into the learning, the classroom environment. So I think the point is that we see a wide range of, say, like, amounts of physical activity that kids are getting in school, and we can change that and make that a more healthful environment. And we see the similar pattern when we look at the neighborhoods where kids live. I tend to ramble. So I think the point of your question was, does it matter? And I think the bottom line is yes, it absolutely does matter.
This may be an obvious question, but why is it so important that we look at the community as a whole as an indicator of health? And not only that, as a tool that we can use to live a more fit life?
Yeah. So think about how much, you know, if you know, parents out there in the audience, how much it costs to enroll your child in, you know, a baseball league or a soccer league. And, you know, factor in your time, factor in the gas that you spend taking them to and from practices and all that. You know, if you're someone who is trying to lose weight, you know, a lot of times that involves, you know, some cost out of your pocketbook. So imagine instead if that amount of money was spent on things like parks and sidewalks and reducing crime, that instead of affecting one person at a time, affected entire neighborhoods. And so that's really the premise of, I mean, clearly we need both, but the premise of really kind of starting at these more environmental or policy solutions is for that investment, you're changing the lives of hundreds and thousands of people for the better versus one person at a time.
Well, it sounds like government needs to be involved at some level.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And there are so many, you talked about subtle ways, but zoning laws and, you know, policies that say prioritize the needs of pedestrians versus just, you know, vehicular traffic. All of these things do impact our ability to, say, be more physically active.
At the top of the show, I mentioned something called play streets. And Arwen, you'll want to jump in on this.
Sure.
I want to find out what this concept is. What is this Play Streets initiative?
So basically, Play Streets is an idea. It started in South America and has basically been adapted for a number of large urban centers like New York City, places like that. And the concept is that, especially in big cities, kids don't have readily available parks or green spaces to go outside and play in. So instead, what people are doing is they are basically shutting down sections of streets and turning them into a temporary place for kids and their families to be physically active. And this could be, you know, closing down a section of street or closing down a whole block. Or it could be as easy as, you know, we're closing down this block today and we're going to have a pickup football game. Or it could be, you know, we're closing down this block and we are having, you know, bringing play equipment and bringing a whole bunch of equipment out there for kids to play with. So it can be, you know, very informal or it can be a big shebang. But basically the concept is to close down areas that are not normally safe for kids and their families to play and be active in and turn it into a temporary space for them to be active.
Now, is this something that you're just studying at the moment or have you actually done this in Baton Rouge?
So we have not actually held one in Baton Rouge yet, but the...
Well, what are you waiting for? I'm sorry.
The goal behind our current Play Streets project is to bring this to Baton Rouge for the first time. So we hope to hold 2 to 3 Play Streets events throughout the spring of 2015.
And you have one starting up soon, I understand? Yes? No?
So right now we're kind of laying the groundwork for it. So what that means is, you know, we've seen what people have done in New York City and other cities, but we want to adapt that and make sure that it's something that people here in Baton Rouge are really going to use and they're going to get the most out of. So right now we're holding some focus groups in some different communities that we think could really benefit from these play streets the most. So areas that don't have parks already, or they do have parks, but they're underused or they're run down. And we're going to those communities and talking to parents and coaches and teachers and saying, you know, what do we need to bring to our Play Street event? Where exactly should we hold it? And gathering all that information first. And then the next step after that is we need to coordinate with, you know, the Department of Transportation and all those people to actually shut down that area of street and obviously promote it and everything so we have a bunch of families out there. And then hopefully, I think we want to hold our first one, what, in April?
That's kind of the plan. So that's what we're hoping.
Well, what have you learned so far in the focus groups and what might a play street in Baton Rouge look like?
Well, I guess the first thing that I
think of is if anyone has ever gone to a Breck on the Go event, where they have, it's basically a mobile bus that has a whole bunch of park equipment in it and play equipment in it, and they drive out to one of their Breck parks and set up for the day and set up a whole bunch of equipment for kids to play with for the day. So in my mind, it looks something like that, except instead of at an already existing park, we're creating a new space to play in by shutting down an area of street to do that.
But I think you asked about the focus groups, and so the answer to that is our first one is tomorrow night. So so we haven't gotten the information back from the communities yet, but that's our current phase of developing this pilot.
All right. Essay question. how do you think Play Streets will change Baton Rouge for the better?
Well, what we're hoping, and so this is a pilot, and the whole point of a pilot is figuring out whether it's going to work or whether it's not going to work. And so what we might learn is that when you factor in all of those costs, you know, how much does it cost to actually, you know, get the permits to shut down the streets and, you know, assure the safety and, you know, all of those sort of things that we may not even have thought about yet, is it worth it? But let's be optimistic, and let's say we learn that it is a good thing, and it does increase physical activity, and the neighborhoods where we do it really like it, and they think it's a good idea, and they think it should be spread more widely. One of the people who's at the table in our planning is the mayor's office. They've helped connect us with community groups in the neighborhoods that we're thinking about. And the model that New York City has established is that the Play Streets program is actually run out of, you know, their Department of Transportation or something. And so you can imagine a situation where a few years down the road, you know, a group of parents in a neighborhood say, we want this and we want to shut down our street for an hour, for a couple of hours every Wednesday afternoon after school. And there's a mechanism for them to go and apply for a permit. And, you know, if there's costs, maybe it's on a sliding scale. So I think what we want to do is create more safe play opportunities for kids that doesn't necessarily involve having to build a new park and for Breck to maintain a new park and all that. But taking our existing resources and figuring out these really creative ways to essentially, you know, allow neighborhoods and parents to kind of reclaim that space for their kids to be able to play outside.
I hate to have money rear its ugly head in this situation because it's such a great idea, but who's going to pay for this?
Well, that is a really good question. So the Exxon Foundation and Breck Foundations have been very generous in giving us money to do this set of pilots. So with their donations, it's, you know, paying for the focus groups and, you know, whatever costs will be incurred by the Play Streets events. We've also brought to the table, so in addition to these kind of funding partners, you know, Breck itself is at the table. We've already mentioned the mayor's office. We want people to help us with the planning that are going to give the initiative as a whole the right advice to make this as valuable a learning experience as possible. And we're going to be recording costs along the way. That's part of the evaluation that we're doing. And at the end of the day, we're going to look at, you know, what we do at Pennington is we measure things and we evaluate.
Oh, yeah.
So within this great idea, we're going to be measuring whether kids and parents are physically active at these Play Streets events, whether they do increase their physical activity as a result of having access to these Play Streets events. Do they also report other things like meeting neighbors that they didn't know? And so some of these social outcomes. So again, once this is all said and done, we'll look at the costs, we'll give that breakdown, we'll look at what the benefits may be, and then we'll go back to a lot of the partners and the resources that we have here in Baton Rouge to say, how could something like this you know, be maintained and potentially like codified in something like a permitting process.
We mentioned the benefits of something like Play Street, and I hate to be devil's advocate, but what might some of the drawbacks be?
Well, so it's one of these situations where the community themselves may not feel like it's a great idea. You know, in some cases, some communities, like you can imagine that a police presence may be there, may need to be there to assure that, you know, vehicles don't actually get on the street. Well, some communities may say if police presence has to be part of it, we're not interested. But I think part of the conversation that we're going to be holding with them in these focus groups is, what would make a successful Play Streets event in your mind? What are the elements that should be part of it? Is it just barricades and a brick on the go? Or would it also be a police presence? And I guess, you know, your question was about the downsides. I think a lot of times with the community input and with careful selection of the place, you can avoid a lot of the downsides. So if there are businesses nearby that would suffer if traffic were closed, well, then you don't put it there. You find a different location. But again, there's been such really neat work in this area. You know, a lot of the cutting edge stuff has grown out of New York City, which clearly is a different urban environment than what we have. But they've done a lot of the hard work to lay out best practices. And I think what we're trying to do is look at what's been done, but adapt it for our community and with community input.
Now, I'm sorry, please go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to build on what Stephanie was saying about, I think, you know, the first drawback that comes to people's minds, people in the community, is the traffic situation. So obviously we're going to be closing down a street. People are like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to drive. I'm not going to be able to get home, not going to be able to get places. So, you know, we really are working hard to find places where, you know, it's a side street or it's not a big heavy traffic street. So it's not really making a big impact on that.
How big of an area would you want? How many blocks?
A single block would be okay. It really kind of depends on the community, but a lot of the models are out there really just kind of say a single block. I mean, think about the size of a single block. Shoot. You know, Arwen mentioned a pickup football game. I mean, you know, you think about all the kids that have the basketball hoops on rollers. Well, shoot. The street's blocked off, bring it into the street. Kids can still ride their bikes. And even if, you know, the family doesn't live on that block, it's not that hard, you know, to walk down to that block that shut off. And I guess this is also the aspect that might bring communities together and allow you to meet neighbors that maybe you didn't know because they did live, say, two or three blocks away.
Well, let's say that there are some moms and dads who are listening in today, and they're thinking, this sounds like a good idea. What do I do to get involved?
At this point in time, I would say that if you live particularly in 70805, 70805, 70807 zip codes, North Baton Rouge, this is primarily where we're targeting for this pilot. We're going to be doing focus groups, and we're going to be kind of choosing one location as a pilot. So if you live in these areas, stay tuned to our flyers and come and share your thoughts with us around the focus groups or, you know, through the focus groups and what a successful Play Street event would look like. For others elsewhere in the community, I would say stay tuned to the results for this. And the next step, if this is successful, is helping us find a way to make this available to the entire Baton Rouge area.
How do they stay in touch? How do they find out all this information?
Well, we have a crack team of PR people at Pennington that will make sure that the word gets out. And so we will be looking for opportunities to engage the larger community, once we have some results.
Okay. In the meantime, while we have time, what are some ideas that parents who are listening right now can use to help get their kids moving and living a little healthier lifestyle while they're waiting for Play Street.
Right, while they're waiting for Play Streets. One of the things that we is almost one of the most consistent themes that we hear when we've talked to parents and asked about physical activity is parents report that they feel like they are the biggest barriers to their kids' physical activity. And as much as we hear about kids being on the computer all the time, we hear from parents that their kid wants to get outside, but they're crunched for time and have so many competing interests. So I would say the one thing that they could do is maybe take a walk with your kids for just 20 minutes before dinner. Get outside so you can't throw the football. You know, take them down the street and maybe meet the neighbors. As much as it's the new year and I think everyone's trying to think about being healthier, make your New Year's resolution to be more physically active. You do it with your child. And so you'll be killing these two birds with one stone. They'll be more active. You'll be more active. And, you know, you'll be such a good role model for your kids as well.
Good stuff. Dr. Amanda Striano is a developmental psychologist in pediatric obesity, of which we have heard much lately. And she's at Pennington as well. Her research looks at differences in physical activity and health behaviors that contribute to obesity and other related illnesses, especially in kids. And she has an interest in the role of technology, like video games, in helping children avoid and recover from obesity and other chronic diseases. So, Dr. Striano, what are the biggest problems we're facing these days when it comes to the health of our kids?
After that introduction, it's probably not surprising that I'm going to see obesity and physical activity. But I absolutely believe when you're thinking of 21st century public health challenges in the U.S., obesity is at the very top of the list. It causes just a number of health problems, not only later in life, but actually during childhood and adolescence. And so a 10-year-old child, for instance, who is considered to be obese, you may already start seeing early signs of heart disease and diabetes before that child gets out of high school. So we're really dealing with a serious problem that has huge economic consequences for our healthcare system, but has big consequences for families and for children throughout our state.
Let me drop this question on you. Let's define our terms. Define obesity.
Sure. It depends on if you're talking about an adult or a child.
Well, since children are the focus, let's mm-hmm. talk about kids.
Sure. Okay. So when you're looking at a child, it is a little tough because obviously children are growing in height. So you can't just look at one single number. And for instance, if you put your child on a scale, the weight is only one number that you need to consider. So you also need to know the height and the age of the child. And so we call it the body mass index percentile.
I've heard
for
of
children.
BMI.
Okay, BMI. And so, you know, if you're going to a pediatrician's office with your child, more times than not, they should be plotting your child's BMI on what's called a growth chart. And so what that allows the doctor to do is compare your child's height and weight compared to other children, their age and their gender. And so when we say obese, we're talking about children who are at the 95th percentile or higher of weight, considering their height and their age, if that makes sense. So if you think about how many children should be above the 95th percentile, you can think about it kind of like a standardized test score, something like that. It should be 5%, right? So 5% of the kids should be between 95 and 100. In fact, it's 20%. So we're talking 1 in 5 children are above that 95th percentile. And then you add on the children who are considered overweight, which is still above what should be their healthy weight, and we get up to as high as 50% in the state of Louisiana. So 1 in 2 children is considered overweight or obese.
That was going to be my next question.
Stole your thunder.
How pervasive is this problem, particularly in Louisiana?
Absolutely. So perhaps not surprising, Louisiana does rank at the very top of the list for obesity, both adults as well as children and adolescents. So when we actually go into schools and measure children's height and weight, we find between 40 and 50% of the children are overweight or obese. And it's much higher than even the national average, the national prevalence. And so it's clear that in Louisiana, we have a particular problem related to childhood obesity.
I'm looking over my notes here, and a word has popped up called exergaming. Tell me about that. What is it, and how are you using it at Pennington Biomedical to help our children?
Exergames are video games that actually require physical activity. Now, I can tell you...
Not just thumbs,
yeah. When you think of video games, probably the image that pops into people's mind is a child, probably a teenager, sitting on a couch playing for hours on end a video game and just moving their thumbs and maybe occasionally moving their arm to pick up some popcorn or eat some junk food, right?
So, right. I laugh. I'm sorry. It's not funny, but I've got that mental picture in my head.
I think that's what people think. And certainly that is still happening a lot. However, I'm excited to see that some of these games have come out recently, like Nintendo Wii, the Kinect games, Sony iToy, that actually require some sort of physical activity. So you really can't just sit on the couch. You have to get up and stand. And for the ones that actually have a camera, like the Kinect, you have to move your arms and your legs in order to play the game. So if you're just moving a little bit, you're not going to earn points and win the game.
I got you. Because the Wii, for example, you can play bowling, you can play tennis, and all you have to move basically is your wrist.
That's true. And those are the games that first came out probably about 6 or 7 years ago. They're very easy to cheat. Those are the games that I first started studying, and we didn't see a whole lot of calories being burned in those games. But now that the games are more sophisticated, it helps us with the research I do, because the children truly have to move their arms and their legs in order to play.
I'm going to go off on a slight tangent here. You mentioned burning calories. How do you measure how many calories are burned by an activity?
I would say the people listening to the radio station, if they're interested in this, there are some averages that we often use. So you could actually Google, you know, basketball game or yoga or something like that. And if you find a pretty good reputable site, it'll tell you, say, you might burn 200 calories playing X sport for 30 minutes or for 60 minutes. So certainly I think that's a good way to figure this out. Also, of course, when you go to the gym, a lot of the equipment might give you an estimate mm-hmm. of the calories you're burning. And if you're interested in burning calories and just kind of tracking it for your own health or your own weight loss, I think those are pretty good estimates. Now, at Pennington Biomedical, as researchers, we want much more accurate estimates of calories. So one device I use quite a lot, it's called an accelerometer. So it measures acceleration or movement.
Okay.
It's just this very lightweight, probably a little bit bigger than the size of a quarter, but very small device that you can hook onto your pants, and it measures your movement and acceleration in three dimensions. So it lets us basically estimate how many calories are being burned, but it's not obtrusive to the participant or to the person wearing it. So we'll use this, especially if we want to see over 24 hours or over an entire week, how many calories is someone burning. We'll give them an accelerometer. You might be more familiar with a pedometer mm-hmm. because that's much more common. Same idea, pedometer measures steps. Accelerometer just takes it a step further. So
it measures
so
all
we can
movement,
see the intensity.
Arms, hands. Everything?
That's right. And there are some that are better than others. But that's what we found is best to use when we're trying to figure out physical activity and free living.
I've always been told that the way to lose weight is to burn more calories than you take in. Is burning calories the only factor that we should be aware of when it comes to staying fit, staying healthy?
I'd say there is a lot more to it. I think obesity is very important. But there's a lot more to, say, physical activity than a healthy weight. So physical activity helps us build endurance, you know, helps us build strength to do activities throughout our day. Especially when you're talking about children, physical activity helps with coordination and gross motor skills. And physical activity helps to build social skills, too. When you're thinking mm-hmm. about having children, you know, join a sports team, certainly they're burning calories, which is very important, but they're also getting a chance to learn how to work as a team, make friends, and so on. So the benefits of physical activity don't just stop at burning calories.
You just finished a study not long ago involving something called Club Connect. What is that?
So that's a little play on words. The Connect part refers to this. It's K-I-N-E-C-T, the gaming consoles that are very popular. Lots of kids have them. Mm-hmm. They use a camera to track the movement of the player. Lots of video games are available on Connect, like dance games, sports games, and so on. And so we called it Club Connect because the study brought together teenagers to play the Connect dance games for 3 times a week over 3 months. So we wanted to create a feel of kind of an after-school club for the teenagers. These teens were all considered to be overweight or obese. And for the most part, these teens were girls who had dropped out of sports activities and were not getting sufficient physical activity. And so I thought, okay, you know, so you're dealing with a 15-year-old girl who's not involved in sports, doesn't perceive herself as an athlete. How can we re-excite her about physical activity? And so one way potentially would be to use dance and video games as a way to encourage that physical activity. And then the club part is that these girls were coming in and playing the games and dances with each other, with other girls their age. So you're also creating the supportive atmosphere where they're enjoying the physical activity. And it's almost like sneaking physical activity into their day.
But how do you study these kids without making them feel like they're under a microscope?
No, it's a good point, and it's something that we struggle with. I think one great part of doing this group study is that they were all these girls were coming in together to play the games together. We very much promote it as a positive physical activity opportunity for them. And so we don't say you're coming into this study to lose weight and we're tracking your weight. We say you're coming in to enjoy dancing and physical activity. You know, a lot of it is how you frame the activity. And I think from the interviews that we got from the girls, that is how they felt about the project, that it was about dancing and having fun together.
What does the family as a unit have to do with a child's overall health and overall well-being?
I don't think the family could be overstated as far as their influence on the children. Certainly for younger children, but even for teenagers. The parents as role models, even the siblings as role models. There is an aspect of obesity that is genetic, that is inherited, as much as 50%, we believe, or even higher, depending on who you're asking. So a child who has at least one parent who is obese is at a much greater risk of being obese himself or herself. And so there's that aspect of the family genetic inherited trait of obesity. And then there's also the role modeling and the environment that family is living. So what does the household look like? Is the family sitting down to eat dinner together? Are they sitting in front of the TV and so on? And so the list could go on and on, but the child is very much, I think, a product of the family and the household.
At Pennington Biomedical Center, you have an entire clinic for children. What all do you do there?
We are very excited about this clinic. It's called the Translational Research Clinic for Children, or TREC. So we're trekking our way to children's health. We just opened it up last year in 2014. And I think it shows that Pennington Biomedical is making children a priority, especially for obesity prevention and physical activity. So we recognize you've got to establish those habits early on. So this TREC is a full unit that we designed to feel like a pediatrician's office, but we have color on the walls and children's artwork on the walls, and we try to make it very comfortable for children. So you're talking about a child feeling like they're under the microscope. This is absolutely trying to go away from that and make the child feel comfortable, make the parents feel comfortable, and so on. And so anytime a child signs up for a study at Pennington Biomedical, they will come through the track, and they will be in a space where it's just other children and adolescents. We've got a fantastic pediatrician, Dr. Shaw, who will work with them. If they're in a longer-term study, he'll meet with them regularly, review their progress, and so on. So we're really trying to make this experience comfortable for families who want to participate in studies at Pennington.
For kids that are already having problems with obesity, you're a partner with Our Lady of the Lake, I understand, with a program called Our Lifestyles, Our Lives, to help kids get healthier. Tell us about that.
Sure. So Dr. Tyson is an endocrinologist at Our Lady of the Lake, and she started this program about 3 years ago that's absolutely fantastic and truly unique in Baton Rouge. This is a 10-week program that families sign up for, and they come to Pennington Biomedical to our truck, and they get an opportunity to meet with dietitian, pediatrician, and a psychologist to figure out, all right, we have our child who is considered obese. The doctor says he or she is obese. What are some important ways that we can change our lifestyles and the ways that, we're doing things at home to try to prevent this child from continuing to put on excess weight? So at this point, once the child is obese, you know, depending on the child's age, we really want them to either lose weight or at least maintain their weight so that as they grow, they can kind of catch up to the weight that they have. And so this program gives them really concrete ways that families can cook healthier meals, can become more physically active, and can address some of the psychological aspects of bullying and teasing and so on that come along with obesity.
Now, again, if there are parents who are listening this morning who would like perhaps to get their children to participate in Our Lifestyles, Our Lives, where do they go? What do they do?
Easiest way, Google Our Lady of the Lake, call up the appointment line, and ask to make an appointment with Dr. Patrice Tyson. Dr. Tyson runs the obesity clinic at Our Lady of the Lake. And so any family who is interested can go have an appointment with her, and then she'll refer them into the program. And one thing about Our Lady of the Lake is that many of our local pediatricians in Baton Rouge are affiliated with the hospital, even if they're in a different clinic. So the parent can also just talk to their pediatrician. So have that conversation with the pediatrician about their concern that their child's overweight or obese. The pediatrician may also be able to identify other opportunities for the family.
Pennington is doing some interesting research about the correlation between television and eating habits. Talk about that.
Sure. So we have decided to take our research down to a younger age, to the preschool level. And in fact, we have a number of studies available now for parents who have preschoolers at home. So I encourage parents to look into that. But we just started this study to show preschoolers videos of other kids their age eating fruits and vegetables. So the preschooler sits down, watches this video of another preschooler eating a fruit and vegetable, and the kid on the TV is laughing and giggling and enjoying the fruit and vegetable. And believe it or not, this seems to actually get the preschooler to eat more fruits and vegetables. It's that peer influence and modeling that seems to be doing the trick. And we love it. I mean, talk about an easy way for a preschool who wants to show some positive and healthy screen time. Stick this video in and get the preschoolers to start eating more fruits and vegetables.
Interesting. Peer pressure.
Yeah. Positive peer pressure.
All parents, of course, should be well aware of their children's health. But what does a mother or father do if they're not quite sure where to start?
Mm-hmm. Great question. We actually get that question quite a lot. There are a number of resources for parents in our community. So if your school has a nurse or a health center, it's a great spot to go to. Certainly the pediatrician as well. So going to a medical professional, especially if you're concerned about your child's weight, is really my recommendation, because they can help to interpret, okay, yes, your child does seem to be at a higher weight. Let's talk about some ways that you can make some changes at home to try to improve the diet, improve the physical activity.
Talk about some of your goals and your future work to help ensure that kids here in Louisiana are setting a healthy baseline early on.
One goal is at Pennington Biomedical, we just developed this toolkit that will be going throughout our state to pediatricians to help to educate pediatricians on how to counsel about obesity. Because unfortunately, a lot of our medical professionals and doctors didn't get this training in med school, because a lot of them went to med school at a time when obesity wasn't as major of an issue as it is now. And so a lot of times they turn to us at Pennington Biomedical to give them some advice on good treatment options and how to counsel and so on. So starting in February, we'll be giving this toolkit out to doctors throughout the state. And so my hope is that through that resource and through kind of building our network throughout Louisiana, we can really start to identify some exciting projects that are going to help people in our home state to live healthier lives.
Arwin Marker, you've been patiently listening to to Dr. Stiano, and what have you got to comment about all this? Because I know you're involved with both doctors.
Yes. So personally, you know, my big interest is really just trying to find new and innovative ways to prevent childhood obesity and help treat it. And personally, I'm really excited about, you know, the technology aspects. So using extra gaming and using alternative ways to get kids interested in exercise that might not be interested in it. It's actually, I think, a very large number of kids once they reach adolescence. So once they reach high school, drop out of sports. So kind of, you know, once they reach that point where it gets really competitive, there's, you know, over 50% of kids are like, oh, this isn't for me anymore. So it's trying to find ways to re-engage those teenagers and, you know, get them to be active and, you know, pursue healthier lifestyles.
Is there anything new on the horizon? Anything coming up in the not too distant future in the way of technology, which you follow, that's going to help achieve that goal? That we might not be aware of?
You turn to the youngest person here to ask that question. I like that.
I think there's so many different ways that, you know, using technology can be integrated into, you know, preventing and treating childhood obesity and for research purposes. So one of those ways is, you know, using technology as an education tool. So, you know, one of the issues some people may have with the programs we do at Pennington is it requires time and effort and cost to travel to Pennington, to come to group sessions, to do things in person. So, you know, some of our programs now are holding some sessions in person and then doing other things via Skype or over the phone or using an app that sends information. For instance, there's Dr. Martin is another researcher who's using an app that tracks the food that you eat. So those are all things that can get integrated into, you know, kind of existing programs that are technology-based. There's also all the different forms of technology that can be used to more accurately measure what people are doing. So, you know, apps of people measuring how much food they're eating, all of the devices like accelerometers that measure physical activity. And then also, you know, finally, really finding those types of technology that kids and teenagers enjoy and want to use and making those active and making those healthy. So for instance, the healthy video games, the extra games. So, you know, there's really so many different ways to incorporate technology.
Let me throw this open to all three of you. For the last 45 minutes, we've been talking about solutions to the problem. What would you say is the main problem or the main problems causing all of these problems with our kids?
Many answers to that question.
We have time.
So I would say right now the healthy choice is not the easy choice. So if I wanted to incorporate more physical activity into my day at work, it would take effort. You know, we've got beautiful land at Pennington Biomedical. We've got a lake in the back. So, but I wear heels to work. And so I have to think to myself, pack your tennis shoes, get outside, take a walk around the lake. And then oftentimes, maybe it's very hot outside or very cold or it's raining. So you can think of all of these barriers that many of them are in our environment. Some of them are in our head.
I'm just saying, do we make our own barriers?
To a certain extent, yes. Maybe Dr. Broyles can add to that as well.
I agree with what Dr. Stiano is saying. I mean, sometimes we do, but I think the examples that you're doing, I mean, these are real examples, and not only you're not bringing your tennis shoes, but so another researcher at Pennington Biomedical is, can we talk about Katrine's, or is that top secret?
Not anymore.
I'm not sure. So we know examples of, say, walking desks. And so let's just say that she's trying to take this one step further. I work in a job where I literally sit in front of a computer at a minimum of 8 hours a day. That doesn't include, you know, the time that I bring my laptop home. So are there ways that we can incorporate physical activity while we're actually at our workstations? And currently there are ways available, but they're almost cost and space prohibitive. So you asked about, you know, where's technology going? A lot of what we've been talking about, these are the applications with kids and the apps on the phones, but making our workplaces more conducive to physical activity, or making it easier for us to get some physical activity, you know, in our jobs would have huge impact. So you wouldn't have to carve out another extra hour of your day to get it. You already get it while you're sitting in front of your computer. I think that's just an example.
It's such an important point, because when most people think of exercise, they think, okay, got to join the gym, got to go for an hour in the day, and I have no time for that, especially busy parents, you know, and all of us, busy adults who work. You know, it's really hard to make time when you're cooking dinner and cleaning the house and working and so on. So we're talking about ways to integrate physical activity and healthy eating into your typical daily life. And if that means that teachers should start every hour having a 5-minute physical activity break for the kids in the classroom, stand up, move around, or maybe incorporating activity into that day's lesson. That's what we're talking about, because it all adds up. You know, children need to get an hour of physical activity every day, but that doesn't have to be all in one block. We can insert that throughout the day.
You are currently recruiting for a program called Drive. Tell us what that is.
So that is basically a program that is currently going on at Pennington that is working with preschoolers and their families, so 2 to 5-year-olds. And basically the premise behind it is that, you know, we want to provide a lot of information and counseling and resources to parents to help parents, you know, eat healthier. I think eating healthy is the biggest focus, and also, you know, behavior change and physical activity, all of those aspects, and doing it in such a way that can also trickle down to their children, and catching them at, you know, a very young age when they're in preschool, in hopes that, you know, they'll learn these healthy habits really early on, and then at that point, you know, they'll go on to not become overweight or obese, you know, when they're 6, 8, 10, a teenager, and to improve their health outcomes as they progress through childhood.
Pennington Biomedical is currently running commercials on this and all of the radio stations of Guarantee Broadcasting for people who would like to get involved with various studies. You have a website where people can actually go to it and find out what perhaps they might be suited for?
We sure do. So pbrc.edu/healthierLA. So that's Healthier Louisiana, Healthier LA. Or people can call 225-763-3000. And the great thing about our website is you may not know exactly what study you qualify for, your child qualifies for, and that's absolutely fine. Because if you just fill out our survey, tell us a little bit about yourself, your age, things like that. One of our recruiters will actually call you and try to place you into a study. And then if there isn't a study right now, we'll certainly follow up with you later on when one comes available. The DRIVE study, Arwen just mentioned, a really neat part of that study is that the dietitian actually comes to the home, which is fantastic. So when you're talking about trying to make behavior change, you've got this trained dietitian there in your home letting you know, all right, when you go to cook, let's open up your pantry and see what's there. And when you go to cook dinner tonight, here are some things that you should think about cooking for your preschoolers. Yeah. So we would love to see more families sign up for that study. It's a really exciting study.
All right. This has been a fascinating hour. I appreciate all of you being here. Dr. Amanda Stiano and Dr. Stephanie Broyles, Arwin Marker, all of Pennington Biomedical Research Center here in Baton Rouge, talking this morning about children's health. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you
for having
us.
You.